Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Pressure Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show brought to you by Hit the Pass. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. Thank you as always for listening to the Press Row Podcast. We really appreciate it. This week, we've got a series of conversations between Brian Weedeye and myself, as well as members of the community. Three different topics. Up first, Brian and I talk about what we're hoping and expecting from MLB 16, the show, now that we are getting near the time of the year when we first start to hear the first information about Sony's next version of their baseball game. After that, we have a much more difficult conversation about what video game publishers should do about players that appear in their game that have issues, particularly those around issues of domestic violence and things like that. And of course, you know, with Greg Hardy and now even Jose Reyes recently in the news for this kind of stuff, it makes for difficult decisions. And then lastly, we talk about one of my guilty pleasures of the fall, which is Need for Speed. I'm having a lot of fun playing that game, even though I recognize it might not be like the absolute best game ever, but that doesn't always necessarily mean you can't have a blast. So Brian and I talk about that as well. So thank you, as always, for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Hit us up anytime on feedback over at Hit the Pass, or me on Twitter at Rich Grisham, or Brian on Twitter at Pasta Padre. We always enjoy interacting with everybody. So thanks. Enjoy the show. Well, as you know, Brian Weedeye, MLB 15, the show, was and is a fantastic game. One of the greatest baseball games ever. Certainly the best of the new generation because of all the things that it does well. But I mean, certainly even in the conversation with some of the all-time great games. And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? First of all, it looks beautiful. Second of all, in many ways, it plays just wonderfully. You know, we've chatted quite a bit about all the things that it does well, the hitter batter, battles and all the different key decisions that you have to make. But even though it is recognized almost universally as something that is terrific, that does not mean that there aren't places that it could improve. So as we ease into the hot stove season, one of the things that always sparks a good conversation is what do we hope for from next year's version of MLB The Show? Obviously, with an annual sports title, these teams don't have 3, 4, 5 years to make their game like they do for Halo 5 or Fallout 4 or some of the other big games. But still, every year, different things are done, design decisions are made, and improvements are implemented. So having said that, Brian, I know that you've been giving this some thought. I certainly have, as have all the folks in the Hit the Pass community. So I believe that you've got some of your own thoughts as well as those from the folks who frequent these pages.
Yeah, and you're right. MLB 15, the show, it was probably the... I think it was easily the most complete game in the series because online actually worked. And they
worked great.
Yeah. So that combined with, you know, really deep modes that they've had around forever. But there is definitely room for improvement. And we're going to be finding out what they have in store for us in about a month. We're that close to finding out some features and things like the cover athlete and all that. It's right around the corner, but there is definitely a lot that could be done to improve the game. And just going back and reading reviews, asking for feedback and suggestions on Twitter and on Pasta Padre, got a lot of stuff back from people on all this. And there are definitely, just like when we talked about the postseason and how we can improve postseason in the show, there's definitely pockets of... these areas where people really are looking for improvement from. And you see it in a number of replies, and you've seen it really for years. And the first is commentary. And again, we talked about this in the postseason. People have been asking for new commentary or new commentators or just new audio, something fresh for 5, 6, 7 years. And they've tweaked it along the way, and they've maybe brought in one color commentator and removed another along the way, but never really, it's always felt like the same thing. And the commentary is not bad, but when you've heard it for 10 years, basically, the same lines and everything, it starts to wear on people. So commentary is there. And then there's Road to the Show, which we've discussed many times, is also stale. It was really one of the best original career modes, but they haven't innovated in Road to the Show at all. And it's very basic compared to modes that you'll find in like NBA 2K16. So a lot of people are looking for new stuff from Road to the Show. Player Emotion, which they worked on some last year, but I don't think we've seen enough of. As far as gameplay goes, I think people want to see the excessive steals and excessive bunts, which really plagued online play. That stuff addressed, because steals and bunts have really been an issue in the show also for 5+ years. That's always been an exploit used online. I would like to see an online game that's short. And I've talked about this on a previous show too, like an extra innings mode, where you go in, because those 45 minutes to an hour you have to commit to an online game is really excessive. So if it's going to be like a play now type online game, something along those lines. And then for me, what really stood out as far as player emotions, one thing, but authentic touches around the league. And as a Mariners fan, not having like the King's Court when Felix Hernandez is pitching at home, which is really one of the coolest kind of fan rituals in baseball, not having the King's Court there, I'd love to see that kind of thing, you know, custom or team specific chants and celebrations from the crowd, and just that fandom come through a little more. Other suggestions from people, an overhaul to franchise mode, although Road to the Show seems to get most of the attention in this regard, but people want to see something new in franchise mode. Maybe expansion or work done to minor leagues, challenges made at calls other than just first base, safe and foul or safe and out, which has to be done since it's such a huge part of baseball now. Weather changes, retractable roofs, rainouts, doubleheaders in your franchise. Another one, and I think this is coming off of NBA 2K16, is an expansion mode or relocation. People definitely want that for a franchise mode. Custom season length in franchise mode, that was mentioned, an online co-op mode, variation in outfield animations. People seem a little dissatisfied with animations in the outfield, classic stadiums, return those, and just other ways to kind of connect you to the news in your franchise mode, as far as a highlight show or a social media feed, those type of things. So that's just kind of a general feeling of the responses that came back to me on this subject.
You know, it's interesting because MLB The Show really is an embarrassment of riches. There are so many enjoyable ways, legitimately enjoyable ways to play the game, right? You've got your franchise, you've got your online franchise, which again, now works. You've got Diamond Dynasty. You've got MLB Today, I think is the name of, you know, where you can take any of the current matchups. You know, you can play exhibition games, obviously. You've got those daily challenges, right, which are these, you know, cool little nifty opportunities for you to just, you know, get some at-bats and try to get some high scores. And I'm probably not even naming all the different ways to play the game.
Diamond Dynasty.
Well, I think I said Diamond Dynasty.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So a lot of these sound kind of nitpicky, and that's obviously very good thing, right? That means that the game, you know, is, as we already know, is excellent.
Yeah, none of the feedback I got was this is broken,
right,
or this is unacceptable, which you'll find in pretty much every game something that's wrong. And it's not so much that we need this fixed, it's more that this can really improve the experience for us. And so that gives, I think that gives them, the developers, an opportunity to really explore and create, you know, be imaginative and how they do some of this stuff.
Yeah, and that's where I think the real challenge is in creativity and imagination, right? Because you're talking to a guy who has played hundreds and hundreds of games of MLB The Show in my own 162 game regular season that I played offline, in our multiple online franchise seasons. There's so much that is so good. You know, just personally, a couple little things. There's these outfield bugs every once in a while, you know, with those fly balls to the outfield where you get your guy there and just for whatever reason, he just loses it and it drops. And typically it happens at a very inopportune time, and that inevitably leads to runs, you know. So that's something I would like to see. I would like to see improved. The way that I really have come to love playing MLB The Show and playing on my own is, as we've talked about before, I will player lock with a hitter for the first 5 to 6 innings, you know, and watch the game sim. Then I'll come up and I'll take my at-bats. And then from inning, you know, 6 or 7, usually never later than 7 on, I will play the rest of the game. It would be great, you know, when you talk about a new online way to play the game, it would be great if there could be some sort of incorporation into that where, okay, we agree that for the first 5 or 6 innings, you and I are going to have a couple of key moments where we'll play each other, but then the rest of the game will go on around us and we'll be simmed and we'll see it. And then for the last 2 or 3 innings or so, then we'll play it from there, right? So it's not like we'll just show up in the 7th inning. It could be 8-1 or 6-4. We'll have at least 2 or 3 opportunities before then to have a key at bat or a key moment. Mm-hmm. Because I have found that to be such a great way to play the game, feel like I'm still influencing the entire game. I played an entire 162 game season playing that way. It was so great. If there was a way to translate some kind of experience like that to online, I think would be terrific. I love your idea of an extra innings mode, but it doesn't quite give you the feeling of having experienced something along the lines of a 9-inning game without going the full 9 innings.
Yeah, and what I like about an extra innings mode is what you find in online baseball games typically is the first person to score wins. So basically you're saving everybody a half hour or 45 minutes that way. Or the first person to score means the other person quits. Right. So, so you're eliminating that kind of stressful and unfun situation. But I always look back to NCAA football 06, I think it was, had the overtime mode. And they only had it for 1 year, and I wish they would bring it back. And I'm guessing it had something to do with conflicting with ranked games, and you have to be limited. And this, there was this whole thing back then that Microsoft and Sony required as far as rank and what you could offer. So, but that was insanely fun because you'd usually go on and maybe it'd be 5 or 10 minutes, but you'd have a fulfilling experience where there's a winner and a loser, but you didn't have to spend 40 minutes doing it. You didn't have to worry the person was going to quit halfway through, any number of stressful things, or, you know, somebody pulling the plug or making it laggy, or, you know, just bad experiences. You got to avoid that. You know, baseball isn't really known as an online game, and partially I think that's because it's never run very well online, but also there is that time commitment. It's a slower pace, but this year I think people at least got to experience it the right way in online games and online franchise and in Diamond Dynasty.
And the real creativity, as you know, I'm sure several people mentioned, really comes down the road to The Show. You know, it's so funny because, and again, just the way that I like to experience a game does by no means, you know, do I try to say that I speak for others, you know, but NBA 2K16 to me, while the 5-on-5 is great, the, you know, single player career mode is particularly compelling. Whereas for, you know, with MLB The Show, there's no way that I'll play Road to The Show because it has been the same for 5, 6, 7 years. But the, you know, the regular 9-on-9 baseball is so terrific. I don't even feel like I'm missing anything, you know. For me to get me back into the Road to The Show will take something really significant. And whether that is the introduction of some story backgrounds or whether that is some sort of an MMO, right, where I'm in a pool with other people, other friends, you know, sort of trying to work our way up, you know, whether it becomes like something social, you know, or whether it's just a completely new take on it. you know, there's nothing that's that screams this needs something new. Road to the Show again, whether it is a change to Road to the Show or a new way to have some sort of experience in the mold of that. Because, well, again, a lot of people love it. Man, if you played Road to the Show more than a couple times in the last few years, there's just nothing for you there.
Well, and that brings us back to the concern I had when they introduced, you know, year-to-year saves, which a lot of people mm-hmm. really like, but they can't change the mode, the fundamental nature of that mode. They can't change it and allow you to carry over a save. They can't change it that much. They can make adjustments, they can add small features and everything, but they can't add a story to a mode you already started last year. So it would probably have to be something brand new, and that's a pretty big investment for them, and this is a fairly small development team with yep. a fairly limited budget, because baseball games don't sell like basketball mm-hmm. or football or soccer games. So it leaves you wondering, you know, are we, you know, have we hit a roadblock of sorts because of that? And we'll have to see. Hopefully that's not the case. Or is it going to just be basically like it has been in recent years, where they're improving but not necessarily adding? We'll have to see.
I guess the one thing that it would be like mind-blowing to me if they did was if they, again, we talk about NBA 2K a lot, but if they took a page from, I think it was NBA 2K10 or NBA 2K11 with the Jordan Challenge, right?
11.
If they introduced the Joe DiMaggio 56-game streak challenge, right? Or the Oral Hershiser, you know, 59-inning challenge, right? Or, you know, if it doesn't have to be part of something else, but something that brings the history of the sport in, that gives you a specific set of goals to accomplish, that just gives, you know, baseball fans more than any other sport love history. And I think baseball games lend themselves to being able to reimagine historical situations better than other sports. So if something like that were to show up in MLB 16, the show, again, or maybe it's Roger Maris chasing Babe Ruth, right? You know, where you don't necessarily have to get the licenses, you know, for all of these people, but you get the rights to, you know, a few key people in history and a stadium or two, and yeah. And you could really do something special. That would be something that would just knock my socks off.
And maybe there's the groundwork for that started last year. We got legends. We had 30 yes. legends, right? And you could have used those in franchise mode, and they showed up in Diamond Dynasty, I believe. So they're at least acknowledging some of that history. Now, I think building out modes, and maybe that's where they're trying to go with those challenges that they have and all that, use them in that manner. But it's a lot of work, and that's why we don't see mm-hmm. someone said they wanted to see classic stadiums. That's why we don't really see them in
a lot of
so much work. Yeah, and for the payoff is fairly limited, because nobody's yeah. buying a game just for that. If you went back, and I think on the last generation they sold classic stadiums as downloadable content. Mm-hmm. And that we haven't seen them return probably means they didn't really sell. It's unfortunate, but you know, all those considerations have to go in as far as where they're going to put their resources and where they're going to spend their budget. And I think we've seen them allocate those things towards current day stuff and gameplay, especially over the last few years.
Dirty little secret, Brian Weedye. If MLB 16 the show just looks a little better and plays a little better and has a couple more little things, I'm still probably going to think it's one of the best games of the year, because it's that good. This game is so good.
Baseball fans tend to be loyal, very loyal fans, and I think that's the case with a game that's generally satisfying, although you do hear the rumblings from people that, you know, if it doesn't change, so-and-so, you know, I'm getting tired of playing the same thing over and over. I was hearing that before last year, hearing that before the year before that. And is that why that it doesn't sell? It doesn't sell more than it does. I mean, it does well, but we're talking a tenth of what Madden sells, and, yeah. you know, a 13th of what NBA 2K sells. So Is it just baseball? Is it just that people don't have the same type of interest, or is it that they're looking for something different? I don't know, but they seem really secure where they're at as far as how successful the game is versus all the development costs that have to go into it. Rich, we're facing a dilemma of sorts in the sports world, and it's been going on for years, but I think we're more sensitive to it now than ever because of the access people have to information, social media, and the way sports are covered now, in that we have to face these issues of players who are certainly not role models, who have legal issues, who have moral issues, who commit crimes, yet still play sports, that are still on the leagues, that are still in the video games we play. And this subject has been coming up over the past few years, mostly in football. And it's because EA Sports has done some things to players who have gotten into trouble before. And we have more of these situations arising lately. And the latest is Greg Hardy, which we've known about for a year. We've had all the details, but the pictures and some more of the police reports and court transcripts came out. And so that wound kind of got opened up again. And it brought to mind a question that I posed on Twitter, which was, do publishers have any sort of obligation to remove a player or de-emphasize them within the games, or, you know, for lack of a better word, punish them? It's not really a punishment, but to take a stand against something they've done within the video games that represent these sports. Now, EA has done this in the past. Aaron Hernandez arrested for murder. They removed him from not only Madden, but NCAA football that year, which was introducing its Ultimate Team, and he was going to be in the Ultimate Team. They yanked him out, and that happened in the offseason. They were able to get him out before the game even came out. Last year, Ray Rice, the video of him assaulting his wife, comes out, and he gets suspended for two games, ends up getting cut by the Ravens. EA, not only do they take him out of the roster, which is not the norm for a free agent, for a guy who was just cut, they take him completely out of the roster, but they took him out of Ultimate Team. People who had him on their Ultimate Teams logged in to see it's no longer Ray Rice. It's a silhouette that says Baltimore halfback. Okay? They cut all ties to Ray Rice. He hasn't been back in the game since as a free agent because he hasn't signed with anybody. So there's precedent here. Adrian Peterson last year and Greg Hardy also were put on the commissioner exempt list in real life NFL, and in the game, they weren't removed. They were just dropped down the depth chart essentially as inactive players. So there's different ways of approaching this. And I got a lot of feedback for the question. And I'd say about a quarter of the people, there's a lot of replies. About a quarter of the people said they think something should be done, whether that's take them out of the game, drop their ratings, or one suggestion that I liked was, leave them in the normal part of the game, in the normal roster, because they're just a player, but don't basically celebrate them in other modes like Ultimate Team. They don't need to be in there, or Draft Champions. They don't need to be in there. It's kind of modes where individual takes precedence over team. So there's reason for people to express that, and I think there's a lot of people have – you know, everyone's going to have a different viewpoint on what's wrong morally and what they can put up with. And I was curious, Rich, where do you stand on this? Do you think there's any moral obligation to do anything about these players? within the video games, or is it just a video game and we need to get over it and just enjoy it for what it is as a video game?
It's very easy when it's not your decision to say what should be done. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm regularly sort of bemused by people who say, well, it's obvious that X should do Y because of Z, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's not your place, it's not your responsibility, you're not the one who bears the burden of the ramifications of those decisions, you know, it's easy to do that. And this is a great example of that. You're talking about publishers, video game publishers, who have contracts with the leagues, contract with the Players Association, and they can't just, you know, willy-nilly decide on their own who is worthy enough to be in their game or not. Now, having said that, every case is different, right? Aaron Hernandez is different than Tom Brady, right? And people say, well, Tom Brady, what are you talking about? Well, Tom Brady, right, was accused of, and, you know, the NFL attempted to suspend him for 4 games for tampering with footballs, right? I'm not comparing the two, but I'm merely saying these are, you know, these are offenses in the eyes of some people, or allegations in the eyes of some people, right? You've got people like Ray Lewis, right, who was accused of and ultimately acquitted of, you know, murder, for crying out loud. But there are plenty of people who feel that that wasn't a just decision. And not only is he, I believe, available on Ultimate Team as, you know, a legendary player, but he's also, you know, in the studio, you know, announcing, you know, or, you know, doing commentary on games as well, right? You know, then you've got like a situation like Ben Roethlisberger, right? You know, Ben Roethlisberger was, you know, accused of, and I don't honestly don't know, remember if it was, you know, acquitted or convicted, or,
never,
or
I don't think settlement. I don't think he was ever charged.
But, you know, he was certainly
suspended anyway. Yeah.
Right. He was accused of and faced, you know, various penalties for some really, you know, nasty stuff. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you've got all of these different situations, all of these different players. You know, if you as a video game publisher are trying to mete out justice, right, you know, from your game, you can get into a really strange spot where, well, why is one guy in the game and another guy isn't, and so on. And again, I'm not suggesting that Hardy is, you know, on the same plane or not on the same plane as other players, you know, but look, in my opinion, right, the right thing to do for a video game publisher who has contracts with the league and with the National Football League Players Association is to do what they do, right? Because that is the most sim option that they have, right? If Hardy is in the game, then he's probably got to be in the video game. Because Ben Roethlisberger is in the video game, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to try to figure out player by player who should or shouldn't be in. And if you're trying to do that without following what the league does, it can be difficult. And a lot of people have a lot of problems with the league. I mean, my goodness, how many conversations have there been about Roger Goodell and the terrible handling of the Ray Rice deal? And, you know, now he doesn't even know what to do anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like, no matter what he does, he's lost all of his foundation to even do things. So it's a mess, and it's a much bigger picture when it comes to the National Football League in particular, because, you know, there's a lot more going on. I think there's a reason that the National Football League in particular has trouble, you know, with domestic violence and violent crimes. It's because these players, these guys are barely, I mean, not all of them, but they're, you know, you see it in their eyes, right? Like, some of these guys are not even, they're almost like, you know, robots, right? I mean, they're so fueled up, and clearly some of these guys are on, you know, HGH and other PEDs, and, you know, they're lined up for violence, you know, their entire life, and the way that they make money is about hitting people hard and about just so focused on being so crushing, right? I mean, and then you put them out in the world. I mean, in many cases, to me, it's not dissimilar from PTSD, from soldiers that are experiencing trauma and then coming back. Like, I think some of these guys, and we've seen it historically, right, have real difficult times just being regular human beings. And so I think it's a symptom of a much bigger problem that the National Football League has. And if you, again, as a video game publisher, if you're trying to meet out, well, this guy is out, but this guy is in, well, this thing happened 3 years ago, so that doesn't matter, but this just happened, so it does matter because of the people thinking of that. That's an almost impossible situation.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think who would make those judgments is one of the biggest complications. But this is ultimately a consumer product, right? So if consumers demanded something, if they demanded that certain actions be taken, then they probably would be listening to that. One example that came to mind was, does a parent want their child playing with controlling Greg Hardy or playing with a team that has Greg Hardy on it? He wins them a game. He becomes a Greg Hardy fan in real life. Mm-hmm. I mean, just do they want, you know, and that's, it's not just a Greg Hardy thing. Do they want their kids playing a game where they start to idolize certain individuals,
right?
That may not be really beneficial to them or appropriate. So that's one scenario that came to mind as a consumer.
It's a legitimate scenario, and that's why I say it's very difficult. Like if the NFL tomorrow came out and said that Hardy was no longer, I mean, sorry, if the Madden team came out tomorrow and said Hardy's out, like I would have no real problem with that. I mean, based upon what Dead's been published and you know what I've read and heard about it, I mean, it certainly seems like there's a strong case that this guy did some stuff that is really just not what people should be out in the world doing, and he should probably have to pay some sort of a penalty for those alleged crimes, right? So if Madden came out and said he was out of the game, I would have no problem with that. But on the other hand, there would be a lot of hue and cry from football fans, Dallas Cowboy fans in particular, and others that would say, now hold on a second, the guy, you know, it was thrown out, right? It was expunged, and you know, now granted the reasons behind that.
Yeah, it's a weird situation in North Carolina, apparently, where you can get convicted and throw that out and pay somebody off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the whole thing is strange. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, then, you know, me personally, if Hardy was removed from the game, I wouldn't have that much of a problem with it. But again, it's like, why Hardy and why not the five or the 10 other guys who have been accused of and or even convicted of these kind of things that are in the game? It's just, I don't know where it starts and where it ends. And maybe it's a cop-out. It probably sounds like a cop-out. But on the other hand, again, I sort of stay with like it or not, and a lot of us don't like it. You kind of, in my mind, if you want the video game to be true to the real game, you have to sort of follow whether the guys are on the field that week or not in order to establish whether they should be available to play.
One other situation I looked back into was in 2012. So I think things have changed certainly when we got to Aaron Hernandez, the way they approached this change. But in 2012, Jovan Belcher committed murder-suicide. I think it was right in the Chiefs parking lot, if I remember
right. In the parking lot. Yep, absolutely.
EA didn't take him out of the game. They left him in. And I remember, and I even Googled it and found a few instances of people saying, you know, I like a month later, I'm playing Madden, and then Jovan Belcher recovers a fumble. How awkward is that? You know, how uncomfortable is that? Just really a difficult situation all around. One thing I do think a publisher like EA can control, though, are the optics of on a little lower level, and that's like this past Friday, the new roster came out and new Ultimate Team legends were added. So who goes up in the roster update on the same day this stuff breaks about Hardy, the pictures and everything? Greg Hardy goes up 2 points in the roster update. Not really necessary. And then Donovan McNabb is added to Ultimate Team, one of the two legends added on the same day that he is sentenced to jail time for his second, I think, DUI. Did they really need to add him in? These are considerations. Yeah. I think those type of things, as opposed to let's take him out completely. Like the Ultimate Team thing, as I mentioned earlier, that's like a celebration of a player and their history and everything about them. Didn't need to do that. You knew he had just been arrested months ago for DUI, multiple DUIs. Like, Fox dropped him as one of their on-air talent guys. Other companies cut the cord with this guy, and yet you're celebrating him by bringing him in. And then Greg Hardy, like, let's just not make him better in the game. Like, just don't do it. You don't need to do it. Just let's ignore him from now on. You know, that's just the way I look at it. And it's bad timing for EA. Neither of these were planned intentionally, but when you mess around with dangerous players who you know have a history of stuff, I think you have to be a little more sensitive to how you deal with them.
I completely agree. And you know, on the other hand, after a certain amount of time, people forget about the bad things, and
well, they have Michael Vick. That you know, they celebrate Michael Vick.
Exactly right. Yeah. Right. And even you know other sports, you know, guys like you know Bob Probert, right? He's a hero in the NHL. But I mean, you know, he had terrible drug problems and you know ended the careers of several players on the ice because of the actions that he did. You know, but now, looking back, you know, after he passed away, it's almost like, you know, remember that guy, Bob Robert, wasn't he a tough guy, you know, or even going back in the history of baseball, you know, there's all sorts of people like Ty Cobb, right? I mean, if Ty Cobb was around today, he would be the most reviled human, you know, public figure there is. Now, obviously, he lived in a very different time, but, you know, not only the way he played the game, you know, but also the way that he conducted his life. I mean, so, and again, we're talking about very different things. You're talking about people who kill somebody, right, who are convicted of murder. You're talking about people who assault women. You're talking about people who, you know, get a DWI, right? And that is a very bad thing because you can kill innocent people.
And that happened in the past. Leonard Little, former St. Louis Ram. Absolutely. I mean, I hated the Rams because he had killed somebody and missed like two or four games. And then
a family,
he was back.
I believe. Yeah. Not just like one person. I think it was a family.
Yeah, it was. That's so it's just, man, I'll tell you
it's
what.
It's so hard. It's so hard to go through this, and you know, it's almost like if you have to draw a line, well, you know, if they killed somebody or assaulted somebody and above, they're out. But you know, if they're just a, you know, they got caught doing drugs or they got, you know, DWI or, you know, they were, you know, cheating on their spouse, like they can stay in. Like, again, it's so difficult when you try to mete out justice, unless it is an Aaron Hernandez situation or even a Ray Rice situation, you know, but even with that, it's extremely difficult. And man, I wouldn't want that job. I'll tell you that right now. I would not want that job because, you know, with the internet and the fact that every person that wants to have a voice can have a voice, you know, there's a lot of outrage that's out there that doesn't accurately reflect how most people feel. But you know how quickly these things can build up too, you know? So it's an extremely difficult thing and people feel very passionately about it as they should. You know, these are good conversations to have, but boy, it sure is it's a tough call to make. So I have a question for you, Brian Redi.
Oh, okay.
And that question is, have you ever liked a game that you thought really wasn't that good?
Yeah, I don't know if any come to mind, but yeah, absolutely. Ones that were not rated well on Metacritic, or maybe that I was like, this is, or The Order, 1886. Not a great game, but I enjoyed it.
So I'm having that kind of experience with the new Need for Speed. And I'm not saying it's a bad game. But I am saying I can recognize that it is not a great game, but I really like it. I really enjoy it. I'm having a blast and I keep on playing it. Like I don't need to play it anymore. I've played it, you know, I played through the trial on EA Access. I'm now, you know, playing, you know, continuing on post trial after, you know, after downloading the full game. There's plenty of terrific games out there for me to play right now. There's even plenty of terrific driving games out there.
There's too many racing games coming out, Rich. And they're all, there's a bunch of different ones, but I'll tell you, this is probably the most unique of the bunch just because it's more arcadey and it's got a story, and the others are very sim natured, I think.
So I can rattle off a whole bunch of silly things about this game, right? Or things that are issues with it. Number one, you know, the story in and of itself, the people that you're interacting with, and the, you know, the cutscenes and the cheesiness level is off the charts with it. Like it's almost cringe inducing from the first minute, right? That's one thing. You know, another thing is the fact that it seems like no matter how far in front I get in a race, by the time the race is over, the guys are right behind me, if not ahead of me. Like I can swerve and cause a head-on collision with one of the people that's chasing me, yeah. And yet they're somehow right back behind me soon afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that there's this whole need to be online all of the time. You literally have to be connected all the time.
I was going to say that, Rich. You can't pause the game.
And yet there seems to be zero reason for you to have to be online all the time.
The reason is that it's this persistent world, right, where apparently the only way you play multiplayer is by finding someone else and then challenging them to a race. There's no lobby system. There's no separate modes. You just have to race up to somebody and hope that they accept your challenge, which is just ridiculous in its own way.
Which is another thing. And then you just mentioned it, you know, when you hit pause, you're not pausing.
No.
The game's still going on. You got a menu in front of you. You're like, oh my gosh, wait. I wanted to pause. I had to get up for a second.
And I don't know if I can play games where I can't pause them anymore, Rich. We have too much stuff going on in our lives. I have to check my phone. You know, I have to check my texts and my Twitter and stuff while I'm playing games. Come on.
But with all of that said, Brian Weedye, I keep playing Need for Speed. I love it. It's great. Not great, like go out and spend $60 on it. Great. But I'm really enjoying it. And I'll tell you what I like about it. Number one, and you know, what's funny is, you know me, I'm not two things. Number one, I'm not a big car guy. And number two, I'm not a guy who gets into the details of, like, you know, adjusting rosters or looking at all the stats and making tweaks. But yet, I find myself really enjoying the different kinds of cars that are in the game. There's a really impressive variety of them. And two, I've had a blast going in and tweaking them, like making performance adjustments. The game makes it really, really easy to add and improve your car.
Yeah, the simplicity is important. Yeah.
And it makes it really fun and quick and snappy to change how it looks, to change your paint, to change your rims, your tires, like all of that kind of stuff. You can get in and completely change how your car feels, drives, and performs and looks in just a minute or two, and you take it right out on the streets. And the pacing of the game is really good. It's really easy. Once I realized, when you click on an icon on the map, that if you move your left stick to the left, instead of just setting the waypoint, you can teleport there. That opened the game up. For the first probably 2 hours of the game, I always had to drive to each of the different places.
Yeah.
But it's like completely hidden. But if you just say you go to a spot on the map and you click on it and then you flick your stick, instead of just setting waypoint, it'll say teleport. You hit the button and you'll show up right there.
Wow, that
opened the game up to me.
I did not know that. And one of the reasons I stopped playing is I didn't want to drive 5 miles to get to something.
I hated driving 5 miles to get to something. You don't have to do that.
Okay.
You don't have to do that. And when I say great pacing, there's also a nice variety. Like sometimes you're drifting, sometimes you're doing point to point. Sometimes you just, you know, like need to get to a certain speed. And I hate drifting, Brian. I hate drifting.
Video
games. I've never liked it in video games. The drifting so far, and I'm about 11 or 12 hours in, the drifting so far in Need for Speed is good. It's not so complex that you can't do it, but it's just enough to where you got to get enough of the turns and the drifts right. I'm really enjoying the variety of the races. I'm enjoying the way that I can quickly navigate through the map. I'm just I'm just having fun in the races and quickly moving from race to race and changing cars, changing out of my Porsche, getting into my, you know, Honda, moving from my Honda, getting into my Ford, making a few adjustments. When I'm going to go to a drift race, I hop to the garage real quick. I teleport to the garage. I switch my handling from, you know, racing to drifting. Then I teleport over to the drift race. Boom, boom, boom. There's a lot more going on that I like in this game than I ever would have thought. And I'm not a longtime Need for Speed guy. I've dabbled in Need for Speed. There were a few that I really enjoyed back in the day, but there are a lot more that I haven't played than I have. So I'm not, again, I can't put my finger on it completely, but man, I'm really having a fun time with this Need for Speed game.
Yeah, it's fun. And I think the first factor we have to consider when we talk about this is that we didn't pay for it. We got it through EA Access, right?
So we paid for it, but we paid very small amount. Like, you know, if you want to factor it out, probably $4 to $5 for 10 hours in EA Access. And that's a great point, Brian. This is the perfect reason for you to have EA Access, because you can play 10 hours of this game and have a blast and then put it away and never think about it again.
And for somebody who wasn't going to buy the game anyway, there's, or that already subscribed to EA Access, not for this reason. It's basically free for those hours, which is a significant amount of time. So, I'm enjoying it. I even kind of like the way they connected the story again with the different types of racing, the five different types. Yep. I like the characters. I actually kind of like the characters, which surprised me. Although it's really awkward that your guy is apparently mute and he only communicates through fist bumps.
Yes.
Which is just really, it's just really awkward.
And you know, the other thing I ask myself as I'm watching these cutscenes, I'm thinking to myself a number of things. Number one, are these people homeless? Like they're always
cars. Yeah.
Always wearing the same clothes. Always. Like they never change clothes. Like, is this all happening over the course of a weekend? Like, sometimes I see the one girl and she's like, you know, hanging out in this place, you know, and then she like goes into this camper with some other guys. And she's like, all right, I'll see you later. The door closes. I'm like, wait, what's going on here? They might all be sort of hooking up together. They might not be, you know, like it's just, it's bizarre. It's strange. I'm thinking the one dude, I'm like, he's totally on drugs. He's just, he's a wacko.
Yeah.
But yet again, there's enough going on, like in a game like this. It's not like I'm engrossed in the story, but it's silly. And if you take it, if you're just cool with it being silly, you can have fun with it. And again, it comes back to that point.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the way I looked at it. If you're going into Need for Speed expecting a, you know, a AAA type story mode, like with great acting and great writing, it's not happening. But I think it does add to the experience of going event to event as opposed to, you know, a text-based type thing where you're like, okay, you've completed that, now onto your next. I think it ties things together well. What do you think about racing only at night? Like, so it's bright enough that I can see, but there are several times where I took turns and just didn't see something and smash into it. So that's an issue for me. I don't know if that's issues for other people too.
Yeah, I mean, I would like it if it were in the day. I don't know if you notice, but a couple of times you'll be racing and it will turn into daybreak, right? So the sky will... The sky will brighten up, and I really like that. I like that a lot when that happens. I would like some daytime racing, but I understand the reason, right? Like, you're basically an outlaw street racer, you know, so you can't be racing around during the day and, you know, in the city, right? You know, not only would you cause mayhem and get, you know, pulled over constantly, it's just traffic doesn't fit within the vibe, right? It doesn't fit within the vibe of what they're going for. So I totally get it. But it would be nice, like just every once in a while, to be able to, you know, even if it's up in the mountains, right, or some sort of a track, to be able to get that out there in the daytime. But I do understand it.
So do you think this is another victim of there's too many games that came out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, the only reason I'm playing this is because of the fact that I'm doing a review for it for the Sporting News. But again, I did, after the 10 hours on EA Access, I did go ahead and I picked it up because there's a surprising amount of depth here. There's a lot of racing that you can do. It does get really challenging, like seriously challenging. I just right before we were recording this, I was playing a, one particular race, and it took me about 10 or 11 times, you know, and after about the seventh time, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go back to the garage. I'm going to improve the car so that I can, you know, basically just blitz my way through this thing. And this particular car, because I got it from one of the icons of racing, I can't even make modifications to it.
It's too good.
So I'm like, all right.
It's already too good.
All right. I got to just do this on my own. And eventually, by going through it a few times and remembering, you know, a couple of key areas where I had typically had troubles, I sort of, you know, slowed up and then turned into the right way. I was able to win it. And that's another thing that's interesting. Like, you know me, I love Forza. I love Forza 6. I love Forza Horizon. You know, the Forza proper games really are just beautiful driving simulators. And, you know, the more that you drive the right way in Forza, the better chance that you're going to have. It's hard for me to describe what the driving is like in Need for Speed. It is certainly not sim racing, but you do have to do certain things right. You know, the more that you do sort of ease up into the turns, and then when you're at the top of the turn, then gun it, you know, you will be more successful. You can crash and smash and still have a chance sometimes, not in the more difficult races. It's certainly not like Forza. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I have been playing a ton of Forza before Need for Speed. When I first started playing Need for Speed, I felt like I was driving a tank. I'm like, this is awful. Mm. But once you start to performance tune your car, you can tell it drives much better. So, again, when you go from Forza to Need for Speed, it's just crazy. But after you sort of just get into the Need for Speed groove with the driving, there really is a good driving model in here. The changes that you make to your car really do matter. It does modify your vehicle. It does change the way that you approach things. And I also love, as I mentioned, I love how easy they make it to change your car from a, you know, speed car to a drift car. You make a few easy adjustments.
Yeah.
And you can really, you know, you can really get into those drift challenges and have a better time. There's a lot that's just ridiculous and silly about the game. And I'm not suggesting anyone go out and spend $60, but my goodness, if you've got an Xbox One and you've got EA Access, please go try it out. And it's one of those games that, you know, for a Black Friday kind of a deal, right? If you can pick this up for half price, or, you know, with some of the big Xbox One bundles where you can get two or three games for free. I mean, this is, it's something to consider if you like to just sort of kick back and have some fun with racing without all the seriousness.
Yeah, there's potential for deals coming up in a few weeks. It's funny, all these games release right before Black Friday and then they get discounted. I would anticipate that would be one of them. Or if you're an EA Access person, you know, in 6 months or 8 months, whatever, when it goes into the vault, and you can play it for as much as you want. I mean, that's, it seems like that's where we're going with some of these EA games now. Star Wars,
fine with that.
The Star Wars game is not going to be, that's going to be way too popular to be waiting on, but otherwise,
well, we get it for 10 hours, right? We still get it for 10 hours. I mean, that's all that Star Wars I'm ever going to play is that 10 hours.
No,
I would never buy that game.
Oh, Rich. Anyways, yes, that's going to be a great game, but it almost seems like with a lot of these EA games, or the ones that aren't necessarily huge, that the best course of action is, if you've got an Xbox One, is, you know, they're going to be putting it into the vault at some point, because it seems to be benefiting them as far as digital revenue and maybe hooking people to buy sequels and stuff. So there's so much potential there. And it almost seems like some of these games are being made almost knowing before they release, yeah, this isn't going to sell a ton, but over the long haul, you know, it's going to do us some good.
Reminds me of something, though. They have promised there's no paid DLC in this game. They have come out and said that there's going to be zero paid DLC. There will be DLC, but it will all be free, which is something that I thought was interesting. And again, I don't know what that necessarily means. Did they know that, okay, for this reboot of Need for Speed, you know,
no one's going to pay.
It's not going to be that big of a game, so we're going to put it out there. We're going to, you know, get the hardcore Need for Speed guys to buy, but we're not going to put it in there. And this is more of a strategic play with the brand and with EA Access. You know, don't know. But the fact that they've come out and said multiple times there will be no paid DLC makes me think that it's something like that. The other thing, though, I did want to mention, though, this game does have some technical issues. You'll get some slowdown. You get some stuttering and stuff like that sometimes, particularly when you're going really, really fast in a really powerful car. So, again, I want to make sure that people are aware of that, too. So this is far from a perfect game technically. But, again, I keep going back to it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of games that I could be playing right now. And I find myself really just having, it's like a popcorn movie, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. You want to kick back for half an hour, 45 minutes, race really fast, advance the story a little bit, kind of roll your eyes, again. But as you're rolling your eyes, you're like paying attention because something's happening. And it's interesting and sort of keep it going. It's all of that kind of stuff sort of rolled into a racing game that is kind of different from anything else that you could be playing right now. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast. We'd like to invite you to go check out hitthepass.com, a website all about the sports games of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. We've got video, we've got audio, we've got written pieces, all about the sports games that we love. On behalf of everybody from Hit the Pass and the Press Row Podcast, thanks.